Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. Your Peugeot car or van might benefit from a free software upgrade. For more information and to find out if this applies to your vehicle, call the lads in Slattery's Garage, puck on 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat, and welcome back to the second hour of Tip Today. 1800-938-007. A huge response to both George and Thomas speaking to us today. But one listener bringing up something else and saying constant begging when we travel to Clonmel for shopping. I never ever see guards on the streets. My kids are terrified when beggars just walk up to us. Some of them are definitely high in broad daylight, and it's not a good look for Clonmel, is one of our listeners on 1800 938 007. You can text and WhatsApp 083 311 3311.
Financial advice with FOH Financial Limited. Tried, trusted and experienced advice. See foh.ie. FOH Financial Limited is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
And Frances O'Hanlon is with me in studio. Good morning to you, Frances.
Hi, Fran.
And how are you today?
I'm great. And you?
Ah, look, I'll tell you now, just absolutely sparkling, what can I say? I just see I've managed to lose my notes on today. I know there were some questions in, first of all, wasn't
so,
there, Frances?
So, first of all, I suppose the one of the questions was about the new pension scheme, the auto-enrolment. How is the new pension scheme going to work? Am I added automatically? Can I opt out? So this is somebody who hasn't even opted in yet, wants to look at opting out. So, and this is where the difficulty will be. So look, the full details are yet to be finalised, but this is a rough steer. And I suppose, when is this going to start? They're saying January 25. Let's see, between all that's happening with employers and different taxes and one thing and the other, employers are kind of pushing back through the representative body, saying, listen, we've an awful lot to contend with all in one go. So, you know, some have, some haven't. But look, as it stands, they're talking about January 25. So, yes, I suppose to give you a rough steer, this will be for all employees that are either over 23 and under 60. Okay, all employees earning more than 20,000.
Is that under 23 and over 60?
Sorry, no. They were the people that are exempt.
All right.
So the people that are exempt are those that are under 23 or over 60. Those that must be admitted into a scheme must be over 23 and under over 23 and under 60.
Okay.
That's just a rough steer, I presume. Again, if an employer wanted to include everyone in this, they possibly could. But again, let's wait and see.
Right.
So if there's the only companies or businesses that will get away with not doing this are those that have schemes in place already.
Right.
Okay. So if you have an employer who's already put either a defined contribution pension scheme or a group PRSA or whatever it be in place for their staff, then they'll be exempt from doing this. But from our understanding, say, for example, you have a business where some of the employees have said, ah, no, I'm not going to bother. I know you have a scheme, but I'm not entering it. And believe me, I've seen that. I see that on a regular basis.
But why would you not opt in? Because it's an extra, what is it, 1.1%?
On some of these occasions that I've looked at, it might be that an employer is putting 3% in, as long as the employee would put in 3%, and that's sometimes the catch, where the employee doesn't want to put in 3%, or even 5%. I've seen employees and I'd say, listen, do you want to give away free money? Because technically that's what it is. So they haven't joined the scheme. So I suppose if it's a thing that there is a scheme in place and some of the employees have opted not to join, it's, again, my understanding of it, they'll be forced to join the scheme that's in existence, or else the employer might have to run this separately alongside, which employers won't want to do too. But if there is no scheme in place, then the employer will be obliged to make sure that they're paying in and that their staff are paying in if they're over the age of 23, under the age of 60 and earning more than 20,000 a year. So back to the other question, can I opt out? Yes, you can, but you can opt out only after participating for 6 months, right? And then you'll be automatically put back into it after 2 years again. Then you'll have to stay in it for another 6 months. Then you can opt out again. Then you'll be put back into it again. So in other words, the main issue here is to get people to join a scheme, to get an employer to pay into a scheme as well as the employee, and pretty much trying to make sure they stay there.
And this is all playing into the fact that it'll be very difficult for any government to pay pensions in a couple of decades.
Yeah, now they're saying they're not linked. They're saying that the state pension and this is not linked here. But, listen, I mean, look, Fran, how many times over the years now we're talking, have we spoken about the state pension and the pressure it's going to be under, and what, you know, that's why they were trying to move it up to 67. That's why they're extending that you can keep working to 70. That, you know, the rules are changing and shifting, and not just in Ireland. Even look at the UK situation.
Of course,
state pension rules are shifting and changing.
And in France, God knows where it caused an awful lot of grief. Yeah, so but for people who might be to the pin of their collar, they may have concerns with paying into the. So what kind of money are we talking about?
If you're talking about years one, from years one to three, the employee will have to put in 1.5% of their gross salary. The employer will have to put in 1.5% and the state are going to put in 0.5%. Okay, so all of a sudden then you've got 3.5% of your gross salary going into a pension. Okay, in years 4 to 6, that goes up to 3% for employee, 3% employer and 1% from the state. Years 7 to 9, 4.5% employee, 4.5% employer and 1.5% from the state. And then maxes out at year 10 on. 6% employee, 6% employer and 2% from the state. So all of a sudden from year 10 on, there'll be about 14% of your gross salary going into a pension scheme for you. Which again, you know, it needs to be.
And the tax implication of that.
Now, this is a really interesting point. So if you have a high rate taxpayer, okay, who is putting in 6% of their salary at the moment, okay, into a group pension scheme. Say there's a group pension scheme in place, or they've their own PRSA or their own personal pension. They could technically be getting 40% tax break.
Wow.
Right? Under this scheme, the tax break is what the government are giving. Does that make sense?
Okay. No.
So technically, if you're looking at, you're putting in 6%.
Yes.
By virtue of the fact that the government are giving you 2%. You don't get tax break on your 6% as well as the 2%.
Oh.
Okay. So that's a big difference. Okay. Right. So if you're a high rate taxpayer, it might be better that you're a member of the, and again, we mentioned this, the group pension scheme that you've kind of maybe turned your back on and that you've decided not to join. Right, you'd be better off being a member of the group pension scheme, because technically you could get up to, if your marginal rate is 40%, you could get 40% tax break on your contribution. So, look, I think anything that makes people save for their eventual retirement is a good thing, Frank.
But we're still short on detail, are we?
Yeah, well, we are. It's kind of gone through quite a few stages already. They're saying even as late as the end of March, but they're saying January is when they're going to implement that. So, you know, the idea is that it's going to be bigger fund managers that'll be dealing with this. That all of that detail has to be finalised. The management fee that's going to be involved. What options are people going to have? But look, I would say, employers, you're going to have to do this, right?
Yes.
So if it's there's still time for you to put your own pension scheme in place that's not dictated by this, okay?
Yes.
So that's for the employers out there.
But there's quite a bit of work for the employers, I guess, in that they have to decide who they're going to go with.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, if they go to somebody who's an impartial advisor, the likes of ourselves, we have access to all the main providers in the market. So we'll have the discussion with them. They might have 20 employees, 5 employees, they might have 100 employees. And we can say, okay, this is who we would recommend. Why? Based on, you know, their technology, maybe their funds, their charges. This is who we'd recommend. This is what'll happen. Your employee will put in X. That can be deducted at source. You know, so that's, I suppose, we can help them with the likes of that. In relation to the auto enrolment, that won't be down to the independent, or we'd say impartial, financial advisors to implement. That'll be done on a different basis. So again, I would say maybe try and take control of this yourselves if you can.
All right, okay. Another question for you then. The percentage deposit needed for a mortgage.
Okay, so that depends. I'm going to assume this is a family home, and it depends whether if they're a first time buyer or if they're trading up, they need to put down 10%. Okay, that salary multiples are different. Okay, for first time buyers or second time buyers. First time buyers, if they can technically use four times their salary. If they're trader, if they're trading up, it's 3.5 times their salary, but the deposit is the same. It's 10%. Okay, if it's a buy to let property, an investment property, that can vary anywhere from 20 to 40% depending on the provider and the rent that you're expecting. So take it as a first-time buyer, or this, let's take it that as a family home for a first-time buyer or trader up, you're talking about 90% finance, so 10% deposit. But just to make sure that you're aware, that has to also feed into the other criteria, as in your salary multiple, the deposit, that you have shown the repayment capacity, and that you can actually borrow, you know, if 90% of 200,000 is 180.
Just having the deposit is not enough.
Exactly, it's not. Wow. No, but, you know, obviously there's the deposit for the house. There's also the deposit, you know, the money you'll need for your legal fees, for maybe your furniture moving in. Don't you remember it?
Wow. No, I never remember it being like that.
But it was, Fran.
Yeah, maybe it was.
That's
maybe
the reality. It was. It's just the numbers are a lot bigger now.
Probably. Yeah. Somebody else saying, I'm looking to take out a loan for home renovation. Is credit union still my best bet?
I would say not necessarily. And we kind of touched on this last month. I would say shop around. You know, I look at Avant, and they're in the news, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah.
Look at Avant, you know, possibly via Unpost. Like, they have a rate there at the moment of 4.9% APR versus what is 6.4% with AIB. So, I mean, have a look. Their standard rate in Unpost is 6.9%, again, Avant. I would say, and I mean, the credit union are fantastic, and they helped an awful lot of people when banks wouldn't help them or banks weren't there to help them, and they will do again. But their rate isn't necessarily the best on the market. So I would say shop around. If you're in a position to choose, shop around and make sure you avail of the choices that are there.
All right. Somebody wondering, what's the new bathroom grant and how can I apply?
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Is that not your area?
No, I'm not my area. And I'd love to be able to give you a steer. But I'd say, do you know what? Speak to your council office or speak to your local county councillor or TD. Or Citizens Advice, great place to go as well. And I'm sure they'll help you.
And if you're doing renovation, in fact, it's well worth having a look at what is available.
Because
there's a lot of grants and funding out there.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Listener has been saving in a basic savings account for 20 years. Is it better to keep savings in the one account or move them around for better interest? I have a feeling that you're going to be aghast at the notion of 20 years and leaving the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say for 20 years, you know, I really would love to see how much interest, net interest they've received in that 20 years, what versus what they would have got had they just splintered it up a little bit and maybe put some in even a longer term equity savings plan. And now, again, I have to be mindful of people's risks. They might say, that's lovely, but I'm not going to do that because I'm risk averse.
Yes.
But you have to be mindful of inflation. People forget inflation and the effects of inflation. I know we had a relatively low period of inflation up to the end of 2020. But, you know, it's a really, really big factor and people need to be aware of it. So I just had a quick look at inflation, as I do on the back of this question. And, you know, I took an average interest rate of 1.5% for 20 years. And that's probably being generous, right? Because that wasn't there on a deposit rate. So to just have kept up with inflation from April 2004 to the end of March 20 years, you would have had to get 39.8% net return on your deposit.
Explain that to me,
so,
Francis.
Inflation in that period of time, in that 20 years, was the equivalent of 40%, to be even. So for the from April 2004 to the end of March 2024, you would have had to earn 40% net. So that's after dirt tax, just to have kept pace with inflation.
Wow.
Right. So what I'm saying is I just took an average interest rate of 1.5% gross. Okay. I didn't want I didn't have time to get into the variances of dirt tax. But put €1,000 in, which I don't think you'd get 1.5% for the last 20 years, but I put it in. 1.5% on €1,000 for 20 years is the equivalent of 1,349. So basically, you would have only got about 34% net, sorry, gross on that interest rate. So you wouldn't have even kept pace with inflation. Take tax off that, and you're probably coming out at about 22%. So by staying on deposit, you didn't even keep pace with inflation.
So it just sat there, really?
Yeah. Look, it did this. I can't. Obviously, we're on radio. This can't. So I'm indicating a slant down.
Okay.
Right.
My God.
So that's the effect of inflation. So I think people, you know, need to be a little bit wiser when they say they don't, they're risk averse or they don't want risk. The risk of inflation is huge and people forget about it.
Thanks for cheering us all up where that's concerned. Talk to us a little bit about crypto, will you?
Because on the opposite ends of the scale of risk.
Absolutely, yeah. But again, it's something that I don't think we can fully grasp, except sometimes, as with a friend of mine, I hear these stories about how he made so much money in crypto, which is all wonderful and stuff.
And people have fun, but I mean, talk about roller coaster, right? This is a roller coaster. And even if you're looking at Bitcoin, right, so it's a cryptocurrency. So technically,
just what is it? Just
so
for
technically,
people
it's a digital currency. There is no government or European
gold,
central
gold
bank, or there's nothing physically behind it. Think of it like a big spreadsheet. This is, you know, an Excel spreadsheet. This is literally every. Think of it as a huge Excel spreadsheet where everybody that owns or trades Bitcoin is noted on this big spreadsheet.
Okay.
Okay. It's all done by computers, massive computers, layers and layers and layers of computers and digital. That's what it is. There's nothing technically behind it. Okay. And that's why a lot of people have a lot of issues with it, because what's ultimately behind it?
Well, it's a concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there was 21 million Bitcoins, if we're talking about one of the cryptocurrencies, because cryptocurrencies covers the whole thing. But within that, there's the most, I suppose, infamous one would be Bitcoin.
Yes.
21 million Bitcoins, that's it. So there's a finite number of them, okay? There's probably, I think, around 19 million of those issued at the moment. So there's still 2 million to be released, okay? So based on the price at the moment, I had a look back on the last 6 months, if you're talking about volatility. Now, bearing in mind, Bitcoin and all cryptocurrencies crashed considerably in 2022, even were very volatile in 23, but they've gone up considerably, most of them, in 2024.
Based on what?
Based on a few things, I suppose. First of all, there's continued interest in them, but now there's certain financial institutions which have all of a sudden become very interested in them.
So there's
in
more
that
of
they're
a credibility
creating specific funds for people to be able to invest through the Black Rocks or whatever it be, the big fund managers in the area of Bitcoin. So that has brought up the value of it as well. But the fundamentals of them are still the same. There's still only 21 million of them. There's still only approximately 19 million of those issued.
Would you ever include it in a portfolio, for example?
Well, you see, this is where we're going now. I mean, all of a sudden, for us as financial advisors, we would have had to say to people, oh, you need to go and buy that in a cryptocurrency exchange, because there wouldn't have been the facility for us, even as advisors, to access that for I suppose a pension fund or whatever it be. But as this changes now with these big players now all of a sudden having funds on their platform that will eventually be available to the likes of us, then all of a sudden it's becoming a little bit more acceptable. But again, what's behind it? I still don't get it. I still don't understand what's behind it.
Right.
So I think people need to be very, very mindful of it. Some people have made unbelievable money, but it's all notional. It's all on paper. Sorry, it's not anything physical. Like anything, I would be saying people should be harvesting. If, and I know we touched on this a couple of years ago because I had somebody who presented in front of me who made a considerable amount of money in a cryptocurrency, but they might as well have had beans. They didn't understand it. They didn't understand the value of it. I was saying, oh my God, cash out some of that. Pay your tax. Take your profit. I don't know whether they ever did because literally then the next minute it had plummeted. But at the moment, if I'm looking at Bitcoin over the last 6 months, today, it, as of this morning when I looked at it, it's worth €58,279 for one Bitcoin. Right. If I look at the what it was in its height over the last 6 months, it was worth €66,000. So it has dropped, you know, about roughly €6,000-7,000, €8,000 in that 6 month period. OK, so it is extremely volatile.
It's incredible. And who regulates it? I mean, it doesn't answer to any government, any authority.
No, and that's the big thing that Europe is now trying to say, OK, we need to start looking towards this. They're a little bit late. A lot of the governments are coming towards this, a bit like AI. It's kind of run away with itself, but they need to get some handle on it. Because it was interesting, as I was doing the research on this, they were talking about lost Bitcoin, lost cryptocurrencies, where people have lost the code to them. It might be that their computer was taken and the code for the hard drive is gone. One particular guy I was reading about, he had 8,000 Bitcoins. Like if you're talking about €66,000 each, he can't get access to them. He has no idea where, they're lost. And an awful lot of, say, institutions like, say, the Criminal Assets Bureau, because an awful lot of criminal activity has happened in the cryptocurrency market, which is another concern from an anti-money laundering point of view. A lot of institutions like that, you know, be it police forces worldwide, actually have crypto as part of the assets that they've seized, as much as they can get them.
We have loads more than we were to get to, but sadly we won't get to it. Yep. But can I ask you a quick question that is not on our list today? As some idiot, who has shares in AIB, God help us all, how is it that they're worth zero when you consider the profits that AIB are? Why doesn't that reflect the success of the bank?
But they're not worth zero.
Well, they're worth very little by comparison to what they cost in the first place.
Oh, yeah. So you bought them back in the day when they were the blue chip.
Yes, am I blushing?
As we all did.
Yes.
Fran, so I'll blush with you.
But why don't they reflect the success of the bank in recent years in terms of the profits?
Well, again, you would say that they've increased considerably. It might beg the question, were they overvalued in the first place?
Yes.
Okay. And I know, having worked in a financial institution that I left in 2006 as I was setting up on my own business, I remember having shares in that particular bank. And as I was leaving, I think it was somebody like Goldman Sachs advised that the share, that the bank should not be sold for anything less. I think it was something like €30 a share. That's just a number I have in my head.
Right.
So that was around 2007. They said, this institution should not be sold for anything less than €30 a share. Within 18 months, 2 years, their shares were worth pretty much zero. Wow. So when you're talking about, I'm not aligning AIB shares to crypto, but when you're talking about assets, shares, financial matters like cryptocurrencies, what is it built on, right? So back to when you and I bought those shares back in whatever, were they worth it?
Probably,
right?
Well, and as it turns
again,
out,
you're depending on big institutions that said they were worth it because, you know, they shouldn't be sold for, that bank should not be sold for anything less than X, which is the equivalent of about €30 a share. But yet, 2 years later, they were worth nothing because there was a lot of, I suppose, when you look at their book and you look at the bigger picture, yeah. there was issues there. So back to the now.
Yeah, but
it's supposedly a lot clearer.
I heard something, but I'm not quite clear about it, but they will offer to buy back the shares at the current value plus something like 10% or something on top of it to buy back the shares into the bank. So I just don't understand what's...
Well, sometimes companies buy back shares because they want to give them maybe to staff. But again, there's only a certain amount of shares, AIB shares yeah. out there. It's a bit like crypto. There's only 21,000, you know, bitcoins. So again, like that, there's only a certain amount. There's certain market capitalization. AIB is worth X on the market based on the share price and the number of shares that are out there. So sometimes they like to buy back shares because they have money, they have reserves, right, that they want to use up and that they can maybe give them to staff as bonus or whatever it be, or staff can buy them as incentives down the line. So there's a different reason. I am not an expert in shares, Fran, so I would say you need to speak to a stockbroker. But that's just, as you asked me, that's just my rough steering it. But shares are a very, very individual shares in particular. You need to get specific advice from a stockbroker, your Davies, your whoever's.
Well, if people want financial advice from you, Francis, how can they do that?
Yeah, they can contact us 052-612-9487 or via our website www.foh.ie.
All right. Great to see you as always, Francis. Thanks very much indeed. We'll take a break, back with more in just a moment.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.